تصمين أنا واصل ما بنفعل شي فاصل
ما تصمين ما تصمين
أش خسران لو نجلس تكل ساز مصروت وناس
ما تصمين ما تصمين
معتصمين وسط الساحة لنعد للشعب افراحة محلى الشارع وصباحة عيش الفنا والراحة.
Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Sheila Carapico, who's Professor of Political Science at the University of Richmond, and she's a visiting professor at the American University in Cairo. She's the author of Civil Society in Yemen, The Political Economy of Activism in Modern Arabia, and her forthcoming book is titled Political Aid, Democracy Promotion, and the Paradoxes of Empowerment. She's also a contributing editor to Middle East Report. Welcome to Background Briefing, Sheila Carapico.
Nice to be with you.
And the killing of al-Awlaki in Yemen, along with a propagandist for Inspire, which is an al-Qaeda online magazine, both of whom are American citizens, do you consider those extrajudicial executions of American citizens?
I do, yes, although I understand that there it's possible to construct an argument for the legality of the operation under the international so-called rules of war, in which it is legitimate to kill an operational commander. And I think that's why we've seen kind of a title inflation for Anwar al-Awlaki in the past couple of days to try to bolster the rules of war argument. So I think it's illegal under, in my opinion, under American law, but that an argument for legality can be constructed under international law.
But there's certainly no protests in this country, at least in manifesting in the mainstream press. American public, if anything, are celebrating the death of these two.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's kind of a almost a threat inflation or looking for successes against al-Qaeda after all this time. And so, you know, I mean, this person has almost kind of mythical attributes, and therefore I think people are rejoicing, not hopefully, not the killing of this person, but rather the destruction of the myth that he's been made into.
So since you're a student of Yemen, Sheila Carapico, again, professor of political science at the University of Richmond and visiting professor at the American University in Cairo, obviously the government of Yemen is very frail and it's sort of teetering on civil war, and there are continued military attacks between the military loyal to the 33-year-long dictatorship of President Saleh, who has just returned from Saudi Arabia. What's happening in terms of, because I think the Saleh's military are trying to take co-credit for this, are they not?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the president, and it's almost so much a series of coincidences that I think it inspires some conspiracy theories inside of Yemen. But, you know, he only returned to Yemen very recently. He immediately was able to give an interview with Time magazine that was also run in the Washington Post, in which he was boasting of his cooperation with the American military, and then by insinuation also the support that the American military has been giving to his administration. So here I think he is scoring a propaganda coup out of this assassination on two fronts. One is kind of claiming credit for it, and the other one is presenting himself as somebody who is indispensable to the United States in its counterterror campaign.
Well, there seems to be some within al-Qaeda itself. There seems to be a bit of a division between al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula and the headquarters, obviously, who've lost their main man in bin Laden. And there are reports that Ayman al-Zawahiri and others were a little jealous of the attention that al-Awlaki was getting and didn't consider him one of the real movers and shakers of the movement. Do you have any understanding of rifts within the organization?
You know, I don't follow al-Qaeda itself very closely, but, you know, I don't think it's quite an organization in the way we think of, say, you know, a bank or corporation or fraternity or something like that. And al-Zawahiri presumably still considers himself to be of a much higher rank than Anwar al-Awlaki was. And at the same time, it appears that one of the reasons why al-Awlaki was able to get so much attention in this country is because, of course, a lot of what he puts out is in English, and a lot, frankly, a lot of our supposed terrorism experts don't actually know Arabic, and so he's much more accessible. And I think that gave him both kind of a panache among the intelligence community, as well as, of course, the ability to communicate with jihadist wannabes anywhere in the world who read English better than they read Arabic or understand English better than they understand Arabic.
So this government that's taking credit along with the United States, and I take it the U.S., if it doesn't have a strong presence in terms of boots on the ground in Yemen, it certainly its headquarters are just across in Djibouti. I think that's where these drones fly out of. There was also a report, Sheila Karapiko, that the convoy containing Awalaki and the other fellow who was the propagandist and
Khan,
yeah, he's an American-born of Pakistani descent. They were traveling in a convoy, and they were supposedly hit by Predator missiles from two drones. There was also an earlier report of jet fighters being involved. Would that be possible? American fighters could come in and bomb from Djibouti?
I mean, I think it's technically possible, but I've also seen reports, and I'm not able to independently confirm these, you know, that the United States has kind of hastily built another base for these Predator drones either in Yemen or somewhere on the peninsula, so that there presumably are at least two bases from which weapons are being dispatched to Yemen in order to track down these al-Qaeda suspects.
But don't we have bigger problems here than these two that were killed by the U.S.? I mean, the whole place is falling apart, isn't it? It's on the brink of civil war. You have defecting military units being attacked by the military units loyal to Saleh and his sons, who've been running the place, I take it, until Saleh just returned from Saudi Arabia, where he was being treated for wounds where he was fairly badly disfigured from an attack back, I think, in March. So there are lots of reports that Yemen is poised to become a failed state. If that becomes the case, then surely it's all bets are off in terms of al-Qaeda, isn't it? Wouldn't that be like they'd be flocking in like they did to Afghanistan?
Well, actually, you just asked several questions.
Sorry about that, yeah.
That's okay. Starting briefly with the last one, I mean, I think early this year we had an amazing number of reports to the effect that so-called AQAP for al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula was the foremost threat to the American homeland, and that does appear to have been a very useful recruiting tool for this group, this guy Khan. Well, he's not that recently, but I mean, there's evidence that those announcements have attracted, again, jihadist wannabes or al-Qaeda wannabes from other parts of the world into Yemen. I mean, so that's one dangerous development. The other thing is that in addition to the factors that you mentioned, where there's dissenting military commanders are now fighting against the forces commanded by the president's sons and nephews, I mean, there's also this very dynamic and significant pro-democracy movement in the streets. And there seems to be a kind of contradiction between two different American policies, one of which, at least publicly, has been urging President Ali Abdullah Saleh to step aside in keeping with a proposal brought by the Saudi-led Gulf Cooperation Council. So on the one hand, presumably, at least to some extent, the United States is siding with the protesters. On the other hand, this move, again, appears to strengthen the hand of the president and his regime. And so I think that the United States doesn't actually have a very clear policy towards Yemen and is, in a certain way, pursuing two different policies that on the ground in Yemen seem very contradictory.
Because the U.S. Ambassador and other ambassadors apparently recently calmed things down, and when things look like a full-scale civil war about to break out, and you get the impression that that a deal's been in place there for some time, but Saleh won't take the deal because he doesn't want to talk to the opposition. I mean, what's going on in terms of the impasse here and all of these deals that have been brokered by Western embassies?
Well, I think they're mainly being brokered, actually, by the Gulf Cooperation Council and particularly Saudi Arabia. Mm-hmm. What Saleh is now saying is that he won't sign until there's also a guarantee that the rogue elements of the military and also particular leaders of his own tribe, actually, this Al-Ahmar family, that unless he has a guarantee that they won't be allowed to take part in a transitional government, certainly to lead a transitional government, he's saying that for him to resign while they're still armed would amount to acquiescing to a military coup, and therefore he is reluctant to resign. I mean, I think the bottom line is that he's reluctant to resign. He, I think, sincerely believes that he and or his sons and nephews are the only people qualified to lead Yemen. And again, I think he fundamentally believes, in spite of a certain amount of evidence to the contrary, that he has the backing of the Gulf Cooperation Council, as well as the United States and other NATO countries. So he's pretty stubborn. And in a way, I mean, this operation, killing al-Awlaki and the other fellow, and a couple of other people, at least one other person, I mean, it's kind of a bleak intervention into an extremely complicated domestic situation that's very fast-moving, as you suggest, that's very much at risk of unraveling. And the analogy that comes to my mind is, whereas we usually say adding fuel to a fire, I think in this case we're adding fire to a fuel. There's plenty of fuel on the ground. And I find it rather reckless to be undertaking military operations under circumstances of such extreme uncertainty and instability inside of a country that is important to American strategic interests.
Again, I'm speaking with Sheila Carapico, who's a professor of political science at the University of Richmond, and she's also a visiting professor at the American University in Cairo and the author of Civil Society in Yemen, The Political Economy of Activism in Modern Arabia. So what is the U.S. doing on the other side of the ledger? You're saying that their military actions are exacerbating in a very tenuous political situation. There's a lot of a tinderbox situation, and we're, you know, throwing sparks around. What about what's happening on the other side in terms of, you mentioned the Gulf Cooperation Council and the Saudis trying to broker some kind of a deal? This has been going on for months now. What is the U.S. doing on the other side if there's some diplomatic pushback, people presumably expressing what you just expressed, which is, you know, we've got to stabilize this country's politics?
I mean, I haven't seen the U.S. doing that much. I mean, of course, our ambassador to Yemen, I mean, is closely involved. He's monitoring things. He's talking to people. I take it his word, trying to use his influence to broker a solution. But what we have not seen is any other diplomatic effort from the United States. I mean, the only person that we've heard reported has gone to Yemen to deal with the crisis is a counterterrorism expert, not a diplomat. I mean, we haven't heard anything about somebody in the State Department, you know, being charged with trying to work out a solution to the Yemen impasse. We have not, I mean, certainly we don't have the kind of, obviously we don't have anything close to talking about a Libya-style intervention or sanctions of the sort that at least the Europeans are looking at in Syria. So the United States' response to the pro-democracy uprising in Yemen has been very weak, tepid, limpid, something like that, and indirect. I think our main policy there is really to back the Saudi initiative rather than to take an American initiative.
But there's probably a little distance between the U.S. And Saudi Arabia, in the sense that the Saudis, the last thing they want is the Arab Spring spreading inside their country, and they're using enormous amounts of their oil revenues to essentially buy off the younger generation, who are very dissatisfied with the restrictive kind of theocratic rules and want to live a more modern life. And we know women want to drive, etc. So they have they wouldn't be very sympathetic to the Yemeni democratic movement, would they? Because that's the very same movement they're trying to extinguish in their own country.
And in Bahrain. I mean, no, I think it's very clear. In fact, I mean, to me, it's a real enigma what exactly the Saudis want, or if they're in fact of one mind. But I think it's reasonably clear that the Saudi royal family, the last thing they want to see is a successful pro-democracy movement in Yemen. And even when they're urging Ali Abdullah Saleh to resign, presumably, I mean, they have repeated that many times, but it's not clear what they want to have happen next, or if they have, you know, a favorite among the top contenders to take power. And so, I mean, personally, I don't share. Hillary Clinton and other members of the Obama administration have repeatedly expressed faith in the Saudi/Gulf Cooperation Council initiative for Yemen, the so-called deal that Saleh continually refuses to sign. I find that to be a very kind of half-baked proposal that doesn't have a clear outcome. And as you say, I mean, it's very unlikely that what the Saudis want to have happen in Yemen is for there to be a burgeoning democracy.
Well, just to summarize in closing then, Sheila Karapika, the country of Yemen is poised to be a failed state on the brink of civil war. The U.S.'s diplomacy is tied to a Saudi initiative that really does not want to respect the wishes of the democratic movement that have been taken to the streets and are being shot at by Saleh and his family. And we're only focused largely on al-Qaeda. But what seems logical to me is if we do not support the democracy movement, at the end of the day, we are inviting al-Qaeda. We're, in fact, creating our own nemesis. Is that a summary?
I think that we are glamorizing al-Qaeda at the same time as we are alienating the pro-democracy elements in Yemen. And that's a very unfortunate pair of signals to be sending in a country like Yemen.
Well, I thank you so much for joining us here today, Sheila Karapika.
Good talking to you.
Again, I've been speaking with Sheila Karapika, who is a professor of political science at the University of Richmond. She's also a visiting professor at the American University in Cairo and the author of Civil Society in Yemen, The Political Economy of Activism in Modern Arabia. We're going to take a brief station break, and we'll be back with Chris Hedges, who will ask the question, are you a rebel or a slave?
If we walk away, they'll walk away. But greed is a bottomless pit. And our freedom's a joke, we're just taking. And the whole world must watch the sad comic display. If you're still free, start running away. 'Cause we're coming for you.